with the Office of Naval Research, and we did a paper which was published in the ONR proceedings of a meeting about evaluation,
mm-hmm.
and we did this analysis of Nobel Prize winners.
Right.
We're talking, what, 64, 5, or what year was that paper? And then we, prior to that, we had this project that was sponsored. The Air Force paid, Harold Worcester paid for a study we did called Use of Citation Data in Writing a History of Science, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We traced the history of DNA. So, we're talking about, that's pretty early on. I mean, Bob Martin and other people knew right away when I wrote to, Bob wrote to him for the first time in 62. I wrote to him, Derek Price, J.D. Bernal. The same letter to all of them. And they could see, you know, the potential there. Now, Derek Price came on, and he became very involved with us. And that was also a thrust.
Mm-hmm. When did you start making your database available to outside researchers?
Well, Derek used to get it pretty early on, and he had the famous paper, was it 65, Networks, the citations, mm-hmm. and used some of our data. Well, we had a contract with the NSF. They gave us some money, and that enabled, that permitted them to say any scholar could use the database for certain purposes like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's how they used that contract to kind of, they really blackmailed, so to speak, or bootlegged a use by Computer Horizons.
Well, now this was the continuation immediately after they finished administering the NIH grant?
Yeah.
You did the,
well, that later
grant.
On. It was after we were publishing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mort Mallon, who was our vice president, negotiated this contract with NSF where they gave us, let's say, I don't know, $50,000 or $100,000, and for that, any scholar would have access to the data under certain conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that excuse to give the data to this guy, Francis Narron.
I'm not familiar with it.
Computer Horizons.
Uh-huh.
And he's gone on to do all kinds of studies for them. And not only that, he did studies for NIH. And NIH never paid us for it. That's a long, involved story, but they, you know, they really, as I say, it was misused. But that's what, did I answer your original question?
Yeah, just looking at, well, I don't know if you told me your favorite thing. I don't know if something like the Atlas of Science is a favorite.
Favorite what? In what sense? I mean,
favorite in terms of saying this is a really neat way to look at science and the authorship or the impact of individuals.
Well, I mean, all things that need still a huge amount of work that needs to be done in mapping and dynamic mapping, and it's gradually happening. But I mean, all those cluster maps, you ought to be able to pull those things up almost at will on a computer. Someday you will. There's all these visualization techniques and so on, but there's a huge amount of things that I would see, and still it's not all that easy to take a paper. You ought to be able to take a paper in 64 and visually and otherwise trace the network right out to the present.
A lot of computer resources,
you know,
there.
What are the best papers on the way? What are the most important? All sorts of things. The kinds of things we kind of putatively, it was putative in that original paper on the history of DNA. You should be able to do that algorithmically.
I've been thinking about it in terms of the pioneers.
My project. Students, by the way, at Penn, right? Their assignment at the end of the year was to take any subject they wanted and create a a historiograph, as it were. Take a couple of paper and trace out the citation network for a various period of time. Anybody can do it manually.
And you gave them access to the database, or they had to do it manually?
No, you didn't need a database. You just take a collection. You could take any of your students. You say, here's 100 papers. This guy just did a paper I refereed on a Bradford curve or something. Mm-hmm. Bradford's law. Okay. So you take 100 papers that have been written on Bradford's law or something like that, and he takes the bibliographies of all these papers, and he creates a citation index, and he just traces them. What cites what? You arrange the 100 papers chronologically, you take the first paper, and you start building.
A lot easier to do it with the SCI database, but...
It's a lot easier?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, I don't know. It's still a manual job.
Yeah.
I facilitate it, but... You still can't visually see the progression here, If I look up a certain paper in the Web of Science, it's going to show you, it isn't presented to you in a way that makes it
apparent. You've still got to search, you can just search it a lot faster. You can go back and forth between the volumes.
So the visualization is important.
Yeah. I've been thinking about it in terms of the list of the Pioneers folks and looking at that kind of thing. How far back is SCI and SSCI now?
45 to 54, sitting right over there. And 45 to 64, published afterwards. It's not absolutely complete, but it goes back to 55 with social science. Somebody asked me that the other day, and I couldn't remember. I don't know if I have the SSCI back to 55. It's here. I got it down. But 71 to 75.
Yeah, you're about out of wall space.
Here it is, 56. There it is.
Social Science Citation Index goes back to what?
This one is 10-year cumulative, 56 to 65.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So what I need here is I wanted to see how much library science, if any.
I think there's a fair amount. Nothing under information science?
Information science and library science.
Yeah.
Okay, ASLIB. But notice, American documentation is not there, or the Journal of American Society of Information Science is not there. Library Quarterly, unless it's covered, OC Information Science.
Unless it's under computer science for American documentation, it seems pretty unlikely.
No. Because remember, we're strictly covered, no computer.
Now, you were obviously involved in the selection process here. Was there synergy in terms of the journals you were receiving and everything for current contents and this?
Yeah.
So that you tried to...
Yeah. I do not know. We did analysis, and for whatever reason, I don't know why. I can't, for the life of me, we had to make limitations. We cut off by citations or whatever. I don't know why JASIS did not make it here.
Well, at that time it would have still been called American documentation. What what year is this? 60?
56.
56. Yeah, still called
American Archivist? God, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. Still called American Documentation at that point.
Yeah, but it's not in here.
Yeah, interesting.
American Archivist.
Interesting.
That's a shame. History of Social Sciences, Philosophy, Psychiatry. So, there you go.
Well, it's the potential is, like you say, unlimited in terms of all the stuff that still needs to be done.
Yeah.
Do you have particular hopes for an area that hasn't been explored that really needs exploration? Or?
Well, I think I hope eventually somebody will decide to do a book citation index. I was interested in promoting that idea, but I got sidetracked. Maybe I'll get around to doing that. There's always some of the other things that come up.
Yeah.
I don't know that ISI will consider that a high priority. Whatever they can, you know, they have their own decision to make. But that's something that can be done. It can be best done by ISI, but it can be done by anybody else too. Of course, you'd like to have it integrated with the database because you have all the citations to books.
Right.
That's the thing that's missing is, first of all, you need the books as source data. So you need the source of it, and then, of course, the citation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different problem, you know, with the advent of, with all these PGF files, my God, you could do it off of them.
I've heard folks say they just didn't want to publish in any kinds of chapters in books because of the lack of coverage in something like SCI.
Well, it's a mistaken idea there, you know. The point is that the book can still be cited and is picked up.
Yeah, but not quite the same as getting journal coverage, so. You pick it up.
Oh, well, you mean... I don't understand.
Because they don't get distributed as widely. And
oh, well, that's a different story. The book also.
But because they don't get picked up in the journal, in the indexes as well, too. And so a number of things there. But
yeah, well, they aren't listed as well. Depends on what field you're talking about.
Let's talk about sort of the tail end of Index Chemicus. We covered some of that earlier stuff, but you've had sort of a running battle with CAS over the years. I think you said at one time you almost went to work for them. Was this when?
Oh yeah, they
Crane was there.
I was considered for jobs out there.
Was this when Crane was the director, or when?
Yeah, when he was there, and Charlie Bernier was there, and. I think that when they hired, didn't Carl Heumann go to work for them for
a
while?
He was director of research.
I was a candidate at various points, I don't know, I suppose.
In the research end?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you got to remember, until 1960, when I started doing it, we tried like hell to get the ACS to do this stuff. I was on a committee here in Philadelphia that recommended to Chemical Abstracts what they needed to do. And so it wasn't as though the Index Chemicus was something they could. If they chose to do it, or somehow incorporate what we were doing in some way, I wouldn't have started it.
And what, that something like the Index Chemicus fell on deaf ears with CAS?
Yeah. Well, that or what, getting out a quick index, you know, and something up to date, and they were so far behind.
Mm-hmm.
But they were, and then they got huge grants, unbelievable amount of money from later on from the NSF.
Yeah, a total of $15 million.
Chemical registry system.
According to my accounts, $15 million.
So,
how did this affect you?
How did it affect me?
Yeah, I mean, you must have.
It pissed me off that they would get all this support and. We couldn't even apply for a grant, no less, or get that kind of support. There was no way. a little later on, the NSF gave various different companies big contracts. I mean, think of the internet, various contracts they've given out, but they are not the same as grants.
Yeah. I have 60, I believe, was the first big grant from our contract from NSF to CAS, and that you had been trying in previous times to get money from NSF with.
Yeah, they were. You know, a lot of it has to do with not invented here. NIH. If there weren't ideas that appealed to them, I mean, I tried to get. I had a proposal in there for a newspaper of science. I had a proposal for a daily science citation index, like a stock listing.
Proposals to NSF.
Yeah.
Uh
huh. And it's just too much work to try and go in and dig out all the different things we tried to talk about or propose. And after a while, you just get tired of trying to sell yourself to them.
Being rebuffed by?
Well, whatever. I mean, you only have so many hours in a day, and you only have so much energy. You have to make a living.
Yeah.
Right?
And Atkinson was not responsive to this? Because he's...
Well, after the last contract, we never heard from each other again. Mm-hmm.
But you were good friends with Fred Tate. He was there.
Yeah, Fred was a local guy. He had been here before. I knew Fred. Mm-hmm. Fred almost came to work for me. I wanted him to work for me. He took a job with, I forget, Wyeth first, and then he went to CAS.
And then went to CAS. So this was before he went to CAS.
And then he became quite a, quite an adversary. Fred became very, very opinionated. I thought it was very much more so than I had ever believed. But, he did a lot of interesting stuff.
Opinionated about CAS?
Yeah, about what was the right thing to do. And certainly, I wasn't... he did a lot of good for them.
Yeah. Oh, but I think the folks out there give him central credit for the development of the computerized system.
Yeah. He's a key player.
Where were you? Must have kept up with them in terms of computerization. Were you ahead from what you could tell of them, behind, about the same, or just so much difference in size and money that they had that you couldn't compare?
I guess, I don't know, I guess you couldn't really. They were doing different things. And what I read, I get CNE News. You get the reports of the news and so forth.
Yeah, easy to keep up with what was going on because of the good reports there. Talk about Information Industry Association. If you've got time, I've got, I think, about 30 more minutes. Is that
okay?
Fine. Information Industry Association, yours and Saul Herner's idea, I gather, more than anyone else?
Yeah, although, I mean, I'm not sure how that happened, but there were five original people.
Who else besides two of them?
Boris Anslowar was one of them.
From what company?
He had a small company called Pharmacomedical Documentation or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
His wife still, he puts out some kind of an index to drugs, or did. Boris was a very nice guy who eventually he came from Yugoslavia, and he eventually got himself went back after starting that business and put himself through medical school. And he never got to practice medicine. He died in an automobile accident. But he worked for us for a while as a consultant also. Anyhow, he was one of the five. There was Bill Knox from McGraw-Hill. And I think Jeff Norton is the name that comes to my mind.
Oh, yeah? What?
Jeffrey Norton.
What company?
Who is in business today, but it's something called Audio Forum. He sells cassettes of language cassettes and all kinds of audio.
How did the idea get started?
Well, we were, so to speak, excluded from Enphase. That's how it got started. They would only take non-profits.
I didn't realize that.
Sure. So that's, they represented the non-profit sector, and we were the for-profit.
Now this is 68. That,
is it?
Yeah.
So it's almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
And then we hired Paul Zerkowski.
Right. But you and Herner got together and talked about this? Or, see, I'm trying to decide. He didn't remember who came up with the idea first. He kept saying to me, oh, I just followed Garfield around. So I didn't get much detail on this from him.
Well, I'm sure that there's stuff in the correspondence files.
Don't count on it.
Huh?
Don't count
ours?
On it. Oh, maybe yours, I hope.
I'd have to look back.
Yeah.
Do you remember what year Zerkowski came in? Of course, we had the association before 70, we had a full-time person, didn't we?
73, right. You were chairman in 73, and I think Zerkowski came in the same year.
Well, we started in 68.
Right, yeah. You'd written an unpublished paper in 66 that looked at the role of the nonprofit organizations, such as CAS, and their role as competitors with the for-profit. And I wondered if that paper had a significant influence. But you're saying the exclusion from Enphase was more important.
Well, when did Enphase start?
I can dig it out of my chronology here, but it'll probably take me a while.
Yeah, but I mean, a few years before.
Yeah, right, I think so. Oh, right, they just did their 25th anniversary, the Conrad Lectures, so it has to be at least 30, 35 years. So maybe some years before here, anyway. But I noticed this in your bibliography, though, that unpublished paper, but I didn't see it, obviously, and I just wondered if that paper, if you remember any ideas in it.
What's it called?
I didn't have a title. It just said unpublished paper that looked at the role of the nonprofit organizations as competitors with the for-profit. And it didn't bring that bibliography.
Oh, but you have the title?
Not
what you just read.
But
me?
it was in 66, and your bibliography is done.
No,
but
here, Bob Williams says he has seen a reference to a paper of mine in 1966, which is unpublished. If he gives you the title,
I don't have the exact title, but it's nonprofit versus.
It says nonprofit versus for profit.
Okay, let me look it up.
All right.
Well. Between 68 and 73, it looked like the IIA grew fairly slowly. Now, who was going out selling the idea?
Just all of us.
Yeah, just one-on-one kind of thing.
Yeah, Bill Knox became very important because they had the resources, McGraw-Hill.
Yeah, he was the first president.
Yeah, so...
Were you trying to sell at things like library and information association meetings? Now, I assume ISI was doing...
No. We would never go to libraries.
No, I mean to library association meetings, you know, where the exhibits were.
No.
That's where you would see...
No, I think that... No, we were more concerned, I think, about what we could do to offset the pervasive influence of the nonprofits or something like that. I don't even know what was the first meeting we held. Does anybody?
Not probably.
The headquarters have a copy of the.
Yeah, hopefully.
Proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
That would give you some idea there. I think that's where. When I was chairman, I must have given some talks. I was.
You became chairman in 73.
Yeah. Bill Knox die already at that point? I don't think he died. I can't remember. He died pretty early.
Did he? Yeah. I didn't notice if there was a chairman and a president, or was there a chairman and just an executive director? But that, I think that's the year you hired Zerkowski. Well,
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. Let's talk about how you feel about the organization. It's a huge organization now.
Yeah, well,
has it been an effective lobbying group?
Well, I guess I'm not really very much involved in it. They when Paul Zerkowski left, and even probably before he left, I had left it because I kind of felt it was being dominated by these huge outfits like AT&T and what have you. So I just didn't feel.
You didn't go to meetings anymore?
Well, at some point I didn't. I haven't been to an IAA meeting for decades. I mean, except one, I think they invited me once for some special meeting. I don't go.
Not much history.
I just, you see, that association's role, as I saw it, began to see it, was that the conglomerates saw it as a way to, preview and look at smaller companies that were coming up and pick them off for acquisition.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, that's a legitimate role.
Yeah.
So a lot of these guys who were presidents of their own companies used to go to these meetings and talk and impress people with what they were doing or not doing. And eventually their companies would be acquired. As a matter of fact, after a while, I remember they even had special sessions where they had invited companies to make a pitch.
To be bought out.
Yeah, well, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't something that I was interested in.
Yeah.
I just, as I said, it was... the issues that the industry had, as the years went by, in other words, I was more involved in science, you see, and they're dominated by the financial information services, and all that took over.
Mm-hmm. So, feel like it lost its initial purpose?
Somewhat, I guess.
That purpose got taken over by indirectly information, or certainly non-scientific business.
Yeah, yeah. Not that I couldn't see that there was a place for it, but I mean, I just... And what have I got to contribute to discussion of the financial information services? Which, money-wise, you know, are huge. They dominate, you know. And then they have these membership fees that were outrageous, too. That, in fact, ISI, I don't think, until later when Bill Schlegel came in and wanted to be probably looking at other companies for acquisition, that they went back and became a member.